The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone. Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. It's great to be with you on this final program of the work week. Last night, we had an excellent trumpet brief that went out. Brad McDonald titled that, Where Will the Hate End? He talked in that brief about the cycle of hate and how that it's on display every day, all over the world. We've concentrated quite a lot on the United States in recent weeks, but it is everywhere, not just in the U.S. 2 weeks ago, this fierce political enemy of Vladimir Putin, his name is Alexei Navalny, he had a cup of tea before boarding a flight from Tomsk, Russia, to Moscow, and during the flight, he became deathly ill. He was in the bathroom, I think, for like 20 minutes. Then he came out and he was sprawling on the floor of this aircraft, moaning, even screaming. And so the pilot had to make an emergency landing in the Russian city of Omsk. And Navalny stayed in this emergency hospital there in the acute poisoning department. And he was there for a couple of days and then airlifted over to Berlin in Germany. And 2 days after that, I think this was August 24th, German doctors announced that Navalny had been poisoned with Novichok. This is a deadly substance developed by the Soviet Union during the Cold War. I think the Russian hospital came out and said there was no foul play. But then once he got to the German hospital, they had a different story. Poisoned! This was a political enemy of Vladimir Putin. Now, we can't say for sure at this point if Putin is behind the assassination attempt, but it seems quite likely. This has been the track record. My father's written about this. He had a couple of programs, I think, back in early 2017 about how that Putin is guilty of many assassination attempts. And of course, many of them have been successful. Journalists, political enemies. He is a ruthless killer. And he tried to kill again, evidently. Well, we'll come back more to the ruthlessness of this leader in a moment. But first, I just want you to consider Germany's reaction, because it happened, remember, in Germany, this German hospital. And since that time, the head of German Parliament's Foreign Affairs Committee, Norbert Röttgen, he said that the EU should jointly decide to stop Nord Stream 2. Now, this is an interesting development because, as you know, if you've listened to this program, you know that President Trump is very much against this Nord Stream project. He's been calling for an end to it ever since he came into office back in 2017. And Germany and even its politicians, the German media, they have resisted against these calls. They have no love for President Trump. You know this. So they've ignored President Trump's warnings. Well, they've actually looked upon him as self-serving. Well, you just want us to cut out of this deal because you want to get our business instead. And I'm sure that's part of it. He's really made no secret of that. But now you see the tone beginning to change in Germany, the Bild. This is Germany's best-selling newspaper. It said that if Germany doesn't cancel the pipeline project, it will be tantamount to financing Putin's next Novichok attack. It will be tantamount to financing Putin's next assassination attempt. So it's interesting to see now the news media, the best-selling newspaper in this case, agreeing with President Trump. An interesting development for sure. Here's what President Trump said in a meeting with German officials a couple of years ago. Clip one.
Well, I have to say, I think it's very sad when Germany makes a massive oil and gas deal with Russia, where you're supposed to be guarding against Russia, and Germany goes out and pays billions and billions of dollars a year to Russia. But Germany is totally controlled by Russia, because they will be getting from 60 to 70% of their energy from Russia and a new pipeline. And you tell me if that's appropriate, because I think it's not. And I think it's a very bad thing for NATO, and I don't think it should have happened.
That's President Trump 2 years ago. Germany, he said to the German leaders, Germany is totally controlled by Russia. And of course, these German leaders at the time, and really ever since, at least up until now, they've just hated this kind of talk. Just hitting them right square between the eyes. All through the last couple years, the German media has been incredibly critical of President Trump for this position. They've accused America of bullying. Again, as I say, they've accused America of being selfish. You just want our business instead of Russia. And now they've done a complete flip-flop. Now they actually agree with President Trump. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens here. Chancellor Merkel, she usually caves into this kind of pressure. But of course, we know at the same time that it's prophesied that Germany's going to split apart from Russia eventually too, but from the United States in particular. It does not want to be controlled by NATO. Many of its top officials, they won't come out and say it openly, but they rather like the fact that President Trump is pulling out of Europe, that President Trump is putting more responsibility on NATO members besides the United States. Well, we don't know the twists and the turns in the short run, but in the long term, we know where this is headed, whether it's this German leader or the next one. Now, the Nord Stream project, by the way, is very nearly finished, so it's hard to see them just walking away from it entirely. But still, a pretty interesting development, and it really puts Germany in a difficult position. Knowing the way Vladimir Putin operates, do you continue to have this close relationship with him and his government? Do you agree with President Trump, the President of the United States? If they continue with this project, whether it's Merkel or her successor, even at the expense of losing America's support, that will be quite telling for sure. My father wrote in 2018, for years, Germany has been criticized for the Nord Stream projects, but it pays no attention and presses ahead. This shows Germany is uninterested in relying on NATO anymore. President Trump exposed this in public and criticized Merkel, and you just heard some of that. It says Nord Stream 2 binds Russia and Germany together in a way that undermines NATO. In fact, though Russia and Germany will not say so, this pipeline project is clearly intended to wreck NATO. That's the intent here. It's intended to wreck NATO. Now, maybe that's put on pause for a bit, temporarily, who knows? But what a development. Here's Putin, here's his political rival, and evidently he tries to assassinate him with poison. And Germany's the one that discovers this. German doctors, they're the ones that announced this a couple weeks ago. It says, many elite Germans, this is my father's article, many elite Germans feel their nation has now gotten all it can from the U.S., and they're ready to move on. Some powerful Germans today are thinking more and more about the Holy Roman Empire, and they want modern Germany to assume more power of its own in the spirit of that empire. It says they want to establish Europe as a mighty German-led superpower. My father goes on to point out how that pushing forward with this this pipeline, well, how that it's a project really that the leaders of Germany have pushed for, when many in the general public in Germany, they didn't even want this years ago, and quite a few don't want it today, and I'm sure the sentiment now is even stronger given what happened to Navalny, nearly poisoned to death. So as I say, we'll have to wait and see what Merkel does. The pipeline, as I mentioned, is very close to being finished. So even if she were to back away from it, her successor could come in there and finish it quickly. Many, as my father wrote in 2018, there's a lot of powerful leaders in the top tier of Germany's government that wants to continue, never mind what Vladimir Putin does. They are intent on continuing with this relationship. They know, of course, history tells us this. They know it's a calculated risk. They know that Putin is a ruthless dictator. But they also hate, they also despise the United States of America. And we know how that factors in to Bible prophecy. But coming back to Brad McDonald's trumpet brief, where will the hate end? Just think about the way leaders of the world today operate. Here is this butcher in the Kremlin, and he just gets away with murder, literally. He gets away with murder. When will the cycle of hate stop? When will these governments be replaced with righteous governments? There's a proverb that says the righteous are as bold as a lion. That's talking about the leaders of tomorrow. That's talking about the leaders God's preparing today in His church. That's what this world is missing. Righteous leadership. There's plenty of leaders, but where is the righteousness? We've talked of late, as I say, about the hatred boiling over in the United States. And considering what we're reading about or talking about or discussing here with respect to Russia, this is relatively routine, happens every few months. A journalist disappears, a politician gets poisoned. You wonder how much longer before this becomes routine in the United States of America. You already have Antifa hunting down a Trump supporter in Portland just last weekend, shooting him in cold blood after others had said, here they are, we've got a couple Trump supporters. This was in the New York Times this morning, one of their left-wing opinion writers. The title, I'm Doomsday Prepping for the End of Democracy. This is just, you know, a regular old column for Friday morning at the New York Times, preparing the readers for the end of democracy. He talks in this piece about how to plan for America's bleak future. And that's all the more bleak if President Trump manages to win re-election. He says, our family needs to replace an aging car, but I've been hesitant, wary of making any new financial commitments as the nation accelerates into the teeth of political chaos and cataclysm. What if, after the election, we need to make a run for it? Why squander spare cash on a new car? What if we need to make a run for it, says the New York Times. This is the New York Times! This is in the freest, most prosperous country in the history of the world. And yet so much unhappiness, so much hatred. And it's boiling over. We're already seeing Russia-style violence. And it's a cycle of hate. It's not going to slow down, is it? It's like Mr. McDonald said in that trumpet brief. Once it gets really moving, I mean, it doesn't stop. He says in his opinion piece, this week I asked my Twitter followers if they shared my growing alarm over the state of American democracy. Were they, like me, contemplating the coming unraveling of America? I was surprised and dismayed to find I was hardly alone. Well, there's lots of us out there. We feel like America's unraveling. Well, you know what? He's right. It is. In large part because of his movement. They want to bring the system down. These are people filled with hate. Filled with hate for Donald Trump. All things Trump. Sam sent me this joke he saw on Twitter. This video of these people in a newsroom. It projects ahead as if Joe Biden wins the election. And then you have all of these reporters that have no idea what to even write about or how to write, for that matter. Because for so many years, they've just been writing about hate Trump, hate Trump, hate Trump. The point of it is, what happens when you actually have to write an actual article That when you actually have to report on the news, when you actually have to provide some sensible commentary with some good analysis, you don't see that today. Not in Trump derangement syndrome. Not in this period that we're in. It's all hate all the time. Here's the New York Times. You're just picking up your New York Times today. Oh, here's a nice opinion piece. What will I do when the American democracy unravels this fall? Maybe I should reserve what cash I have for a second car to make a run for it. Oh, yes. That's the newspaper of record. That's the New York Times. That's the gray lady of New York. Just preparing its readers for the collapse of American democracy. In truth, these left-wing radicals, they despise democracy. They despise the republic. They hate the Constitution. They'd rather replace all of it with their Marxist utopia. The cycle of hate. This killer, by the way, that shot that man dead in Portland, Michael Reinhold, he's supposedly one of the Antifa security guards and was a proud security guard, murders this Trump supporter, and the police had been hunting for him, I guess since Saturday night it happened. They finally tracked him down yesterday. I'm not sure if it's any help or any thanks to Vice, the publication that interviewed him on the air, played it before all Americans, as this thug, this killer, this Putin wannabe, says in front of the camera that, yeah, I killed him, I had to. Here's clip one.
Lots of lawyers suggest that I shouldn't even be saying anything, but I feel it's important that the world at least gets a little bit of what's really going on, because there's been a lot of propaganda put out there. I had no choice. I mean, I had a choice. I could have sat there and watched them kill a friend of mine of color, but I wasn't going to do that.
That's a man admitting that he murdered that Trump supporter on TV. This is in the United States. This is like something you see in some horror movie. He's in some secure location, off in the woods, I guess. And the police finally tracked him down, and they, of course, have a shootout with him. And they kill him. Here's a murderer on the run, and Vice treats him like, well, he's just a peaceful protester, don't you know? This is what qualifies as peaceful protesting in America today. And then you see the coverage on this man's death. Just grossly irresponsible. Horrible coverage. A murderer. A murderer that should have been found the moment he contacted Vice. There's another rioter that was arrested 4 times in 4 weeks by Portland law enforcement officials. 4 times. Look at his 4 mugshots. I mean, it's just on and on and on and on. When do you put the man in jail? When do you lock him up and say, that's enough? Stay off our streets. I saw some footage this morning of this guy that found a tent city where a lot of these rioters are staying. Well, they riot at night, and then they go to their little peaceful tent city during the day. And I guess the Portland authorities, I guess Ted Wheeler, I guess he's fine with it. He has to leave his condo while these people are probably looked after by the city, because they're protesters, and that's their First Amendment right. In Rochester, New York, there was a man who died in police custody. What's interesting here, above all, is the timing. Just knowing about the real spirit world. You may have seen the footage by now, but it goes back to March, I think it was, right at the peak of the coronavirus pandemic. The policemen are there with this black man. I guess he's drunk or he's high on something. And I think he had been arrested earlier in the day. So then they come. He's naked in the street. He's spitting all over them. So they put this hood over him to keep him from spitting COVID-19 germs, I guess. Well, the man ends up dying in custody of asphyxiation. So, of course, there's another uproar in Rochester. And now some are, and judging by the media coverage here again, it's as if the media, they want to see another Kenosha. But here again, think about it from the devil's perspective and this cycle of hate. Remember that quote that I gave to you from the trumpet from a few months ago? In a nation of 330 million people, you're always going to be able to find one incident that confirms everything that you believe about the United States of America. If you believe it's a hateful, racist country. So here comes another incident. It happened 6 months ago, and lo and behold, it comes to the surface now, this week. It's just one after another. You think the demons aren't active right now? Satan and his demons, Revelation 12 says they've been cast down to the ground. They've been cast down to this earth. They're confined to this earth. Verse 12 of Revelation 12 says that Satan has great wrath. Brad McDonald brought this out in his trumpet brief. He is filled with wrath. He is filled with anger. And what did Jesus prophesy about our time today? It says, and then shall many be offended and shall betray one another and shall hate one another. That's Matthew 24:10. People hate each other. That's the political climate that we're in. Hatred. And you hear it from both sides. I told you yesterday and the day before about the Democrats' last hope to try to steal this election. They know they're running way behind. And so out comes Axios with this study. They've constructed this model. You can expect Donald Trump to win on a landslide on election night. But when the millions and millions of mail-in ballots come in, this has never happened in the United States. I mean, we always know the night of or early the next morning, don't we? Not this time, say the Democrats. Not this time, says the Democrat media complex. Not this time, says Hillary Clinton. As she told Joe Biden, don't you dare concede. Don't you concede the night of. Don't you concede the week after. You give us long enough and we'll find a way to win this. So they got the Red Mirage theory or strategy, whatever you want to call it. It might be a red wave on November the 3rd, but the blue wave will overtake it 7 days later, maybe 7 weeks later. Who knows? And so they're all discussing this. The media, the Democrats. Here's Facebook's Mark Zuckerberg talking about how that, hey, if the count goes on for weeks and weeks and weeks, there's nothing illegitimate about that. That's just perfectly normal. Clip two.
That there's nothing illegitimate about taking a few extra days or even weeks in order to make sure that all the votes get counted. In fact, it would be illegitimate if we didn't make sure that all of the ballot votes were counted.
So what will you do, say, on election night if one candidate says, I won, when all the votes aren't in?
We're putting in place a policy. We have a partnership with Reuters. And if someone tries to prematurely declare victory, whether it's in a presidential election or any of the others, before there's a consensus on who won that election, then we're going to add some context and a label to that post saying there isn't an official result on this election.
So you've got the reporter there. She's talking to, you know, the social media king. He's talking about his partnership with Reuters. And all of these people, none of them would be saying this if they knew, if they were confident that Joe Biden was going to win in a landslide, which is what we were being told just a few weeks ago, right? It's easy. It's in the bag for Joe Biden. Now they know the internal polling says no way. Trump's way ahead. He's going to Kenosha. He's getting huge crowds there. That's a city that's 65% Democrat. Now you compare the reception the president got on Tuesday with the non-existent reception that Joe Biden got yesterday. And here he is just following in the steps of Donald Trump, telling Donald Trump, don't you go to Kenosha. That's terrible. It'll be a disaster. You've got to stay away from that place. Donald Trump goes. It's a great success. And then Joe Biden says, well, maybe I should go. Well, look at the pictures for yourself. Of course, the president's moved on from Kenosha, but compare his rally in Pennsylvania yesterday. Right there on the tarmac. He just lands Air Force One, gets out of the plane, and there's thousands of people to see him. So, you've got to have big tech as part of the plot. What are you going to do? What are you going to do if one campaign comes out and announces that we've won? Wink, wink. If Donald Trump says we've won, what will you do, Mr. Zuckerberg? Well, we've got a partner. Here's what we've got to plan. We've got a plan in place. We're social media. We're going to put up some alerts. We're going to say not so fast. Hey, we're partnering with Reuters. So this is going to be super duper fair. You got to understand, we're in the mainstream. They're all in it together. And here they were going on and on and on about Russian meddling. And look at what they're doing. Even as they, and you'll hear this more, commentators saying, you know, what's shocking about all of this is how Donald Trump is trying to cheat. Just like they said in 2016, even as they were meddling in the election. And so here is history 4 years later repeating itself. Listen to Jeffrey Toobin on CNN last night, clip three.
What's going on here is an attempt to suppress Democratic votes, capital D, Democrats, that, you know, it is long established that Democrats vote by mail in greater numbers than Republicans do. And to the extent you can drive that vote down or discredit that vote and prepare the way for, you know, that vote to be challenged later, you are hurting Democrats. So this isn't just sort of chaos sowing. This is an attempt to win the election for Republicans. This is not just lying, but it's lying for partisan purposes.
I love the statement about how it's long established that Democrats vote by mail, just like it's long established that Democrats cheat when there's mail-in ballots. Millions and millions of ballots going out. Not absentee ballots, which, like the Attorney General said the other day, they go to specific addresses that have requested them. I'm not going to be in town. I'm going to be out of the country. I'm going to be doing this. And so I need an absentee ballot. This is left-wing governors saying, hey, it's so dangerous, COVID-19. We just got to send ballots, millions of them out there, just blindly. It doesn't matter any house of residence. And then you see those stories like in the New York Post the other day, this former Democrat operative who talked about the ways in which they harvested votes. And they always trickle in, don't they, in favor of Democrats. Of course, Democrats vote by mail in greater numbers than Republicans because they cheat more. That's why. And Donald Trump, of course, has been pointing this out on the campaign trail. Here's his rally yesterday in Pennsylvania, clip eight.
And in Nevada, they actually have a provision where they don't have to be counted till 7 days after the election. So that means if we have a close election, could be close. I hope it's not. I hope we have a landslide like you've never seen. But if we have a close election, that means Nevada has the right to, and I love Nevada. I think we're going to win Nevada, except where they're sending all these hundreds of thousands, millions of unsolicited ballots to people in Nevada and people that probably left a long time ago. It's very unfair.
Or people that have even died a long time ago. Everyone knows, like the AG said the other day, that these voting lists are far, far from updated. It's very unfair, as he says there, but somehow or another, he'll navigate his way through. I went through the list of attacks yesterday, all of these attacks that were supposed to bring him down. But coming back to the forthcoming election fiasco, my father and I've referred to this article before, 20 years ago, the real election crisis he's following or riding after the disastrous election of 2000 between George Bush, George W. Bush, and Al Gore, where they had to go back and do all of these ridiculous recounts and then get the courts involved and eventually even the Supreme Court because so many people were trying to cheat. My father wrote another commentator, said that the Democrats outmaneuvered the Republicans. And then he says, outmaneuvered? That means the presidential election can be stolen by lawyers who can find favorable judges. It's not a matter of law or the Constitution. It all depends on getting lawyers who can maneuver around such obstacles. It used to be, you see, that a president or one seeking the presidency would just bow out for the sake of the country if it was a close election and even if it was somewhat disputed. Look at the history with JFK and Nixon back in 1960. Nixon just bowed out. Even as he was hearing about all of this crookedness, this corruption coming from Cook County, razor thin margins. That's human nature, though. Cheating, dishonesty, stealing, hatred, division, strife. That's been the way of man's governments, not just in Russia, even in the democracies that we celebrate, even in the democracies that so many of us want to tear down and destroy and overturn. My father wrote in 2000, this is 20 years ago, we've been so poisoned by our corrupt political process that we don't even see the danger of such reasoning. Too many of our people exalt leaders who maneuver around the law instead of those who passionately keep it. That's the way these Democrats, these radical leftists think. Well, we're just maneuvering. That's why we've got to get the army of lawyers. We've got to be ready to maneuver. Don't dare concede. Turn this over to the lawyers, Joe Biden. Turn it over to the lawyers on November 4th, and we'll see how far we can drag this out. Those are the marching orders coming from Hillary Clinton. They're proud of it. They don't talk about the Constitution or the law or the sake of the country or how we can bring people together. It's hatred. That's what it's fueled by. He says the deadly turn in the election occurred when a judge allowed a subjective hand recount. And so then you had all of this, just the circus of 2000. And these people and the cameras were there and they're holding up the ballots trying to see if this hanging Chad meant this or that. That's in the United States of America, a step or two removed from a third world status. When you have elections like this, it's like some have said this week, if you can't as an American people have faith and trust in a fair and just election, then what does that say? What does that say about the nation? My father said in 2000 that it was like opening Pandora's box. Encouraging corruption, that's what it amounted to. He said, finally, the Florida vote scandal will poison our... Listen to this, how prescient it is. The Florida vote scandal will poison our political system more than any scandal of the past 8 years. That would be the duration of the Clinton administration. He said, it eclipses all of those scandals. The corrosive process is so deeply entrenched, it will continue from one election to the next. Oh, yes. Here we are, one election to the next. He says it's tearing our political system apart. This warring spirit, this spirit of hatred, it's tearing our political system apart. There was a great article, by the way, in The Critic about how that all of this lockdown, and of course that's part of the strategy, we got to keep it locked down for everybody, except when Nancy Pelosi needs to do her hair. But aside from that, we've got to keep it shut down, schools, everything else. Because, well, that's the excuse for the mail-in ballots. This article, I think it's centered here in the UK, points out how that the lockdown has crippled the rule of law. You've really locked down liberty. Freedom. I played that clip from Australia. And there's clips every morning, believe me. The police, you know, enforcing someone has to wear a mask and even getting into physical confrontations over it. Arresting that pregnant woman. This is from The Critic, as I say. It quotes Lord Sumption. He's the former Supreme Court Justice here in the UK, saying the police had no business doing anything in a national crisis except enforcing the law. They're not there to give effect to their own views on what a national crisis might require or to give effect to what a prime minister's views might require in a crisis. So Lord Sumption's point is that people are just kind of making it up at the local level. They're not upholding the law of the land or a constitution. Far from it. It quotes one attorney in this piece saying, the rule of law is being so emasculated that when you actually need it, you'll find it's no longer there. That then leads to arbitrary decisions, overreach, and the law is being used against citizens. We've become too used to being a liberal democratic country that our rights are being pulled away by stealth. See, it's just happening bit by bit. And of course, today, it's not even bit by bit in 2020. It's shocking, isn't it, what's happening in Victoria, Australia? It's shocking. The measures imposed upon people of California or New York. Listen to Andrew Cuomo. He's the governor of New York. There's a phone conference. I don't know who's all on the conference with him, but he's discussing here about how much he'd love to reopen the restaurants, but of course he can't do that until they really can enforce, until they have the police even to enforce the mandates of wearing masks and that sort of thing. Here's Governor Cuomo on the phone conference, clip 5.
I'd like to see the restaurants open. However, there's a but, B-U-T. The but is our rules and guidance on reopening is only as good as the compliance and the enforcement. I don't know, look, you have 34,000 NYPD. There's a lot of questions about the NYPD and their activities. Put together a task force of NYPD, Speaker Johnson, and say they're going to be 4,000 police who are going to be doing restaurant compliance.
4,000 policemen just in New York City. I guess that amounts to about 15% of the NYPD to be on restaurant patrol. Restaurant. Here is a city. People are fleeing the city. The city went up in flames, smashed up in June. And as far as I can tell, I don't think there are even 40 policemen to try to prevent any of that from happening. This is the governor of New York suggesting 4,000 policemen, I guess, to go from restaurant to restaurant just to make sure. Now, if the mandate is there, if we issue a decree about mask wearing and distancing, it better be enforced. It had better be enforced, you see? Meanwhile, these same leaders allow total mayhem, violence, looting, thuggery, even murder. And of course, shootings and murders, they've skyrocketed on up. Mayor de Blasio, by the way, blames that on COVID. He blames it on COVID-19. There's a great article in, I think I have that clip, actually. Go ahead and play what de Blasio said about this uptick in murder. Clip 6.
Look, we've had a perfect storm here, Katie. People, a million jobs lost in this city. People without work, kids not going to school, houses of worship not open, you name it. And then our court system hasn't been functioning until recently. All because of the coronavirus. So let's be clear. For the last 6 previous years, crime was going down steadily in New York City. Safest big city in America. What changed it? A pandemic that knocked out so much of the life of this city and just created crisis after crisis.
So they use coronavirus to bash President Trump over the economy. And at the same time, they use the same pandemic to excuse their stepping aside and letting the riots just run roughshod over their cities. Well, we have no choice. There's violence, yes. There's murder, yes. There's shootings, yes. It's because of the sickness. Look at what the sickness has done. It's not our fault. Well, it's President Trump's fault. Well, of course, the economic lockdown and shutdown, that's President Trump's fault. That's all on him. That's the mayor of New York City blaming the skyrocketing shootings and murders in New York City on a pandemic and a lockdown that these same leaders have insisted on. Noah Rothman at Commentary had a great article about the mayors whose names you don't know. You hear a lot about Mayor de Blasio. For what reason? Why? Or Mayor Bowser in D.C. Ginny Durkin. She's in Seattle, I think. Ted Wheeler. He's in Portland. Jacob Fry. He's in Minneapolis. Linda Cruson. She's in St. Louis. Why do you know a lot of these names? Because of their incompetent leadership. Because of their weak leadership. Because they've appeased the mobs. Because they've told police to stand down. That's why you know these people. The ones you don't hear of. Detroit Mayor Mike Dugan. It says here in this commentary piece, for more than 80 days, Black Lives Matter protesters and Detroit police observed a tense but durable truce, and the conditions for preserving the peace were simple. As long as the movement was moving, literally, maintaining forward motion, there would be no interference with the protests from law enforcement. That peace was shattered in the final week of August when demonstrators turned violent and attempted to occupy a downtown street. I'm not going to let any group set up a Seattle zone of lawlessness here in the city of Detroit, said the Detroit police chief. That is non-negotiable. It says that day, riot gear-clad police swarmed the section of the city in which demonstrators had gathered, arresting at least 44 protesters, confiscating weapons and body armor, and charging many of them with a variety of misdemeanor offenses. As of this writing, Mayor Dugan continues to sleep well in his home, quite unlike Ted Wheeler, we might add. He's looking for a new place. He's got to leave his condo because Antifa won't leave them alone. Can't imagine his neighbors are happy with him. So he's on the way out. He's got to find a new place to live. As of this writing, Mayor Dugan continues to sleep well in his home, free from the fear of forcible ejection by a violent mob. So you don't hear about this mayor because he's doing his job. That's why. And oh, the media, they're bored with something like that. That's not a story. They're impressed. Instead, they're impressed by someone like Jacob Fry who surrenders to the mob. This they love. Tells you something about the media. They're Antifa's biggest cheerleaders. That's why they won't come out and denounce it. Even when they've had this shift because of the way the political winds are blowing. Don Lemon and some of the others saying the rioting has to stop. Have they come out and said, Antifa's responsible? Antifa's responsible for this rioting. They haven't done something like that. Oh, no. They just say the rioting has to stop. Van Jones says, you know, we've got to tamp down the nighttime marches. They're just nighttime marches through the cities. This is Antifa. These are Marxist organizations that are trying to start a race war, that are trying to start a revolution. And the only ones that have had success in preventing the violence and the looting and the arson are the mayors, together with their police chiefs, that have stood up to the mob, that have said, like they said in Detroit, this is non-negotiable. No way. No way are you going to turn this part of the city into Chaz or Chop. It says, even despite its history, Newark, here's another example. Newark, New Jersey managed to escape the kind of violence that typified the summer of 2020. It says, in the early going, Mayor Ross Baraka received glowing praise in the mainstream press for successfully diffusing the tensions that erupted following the killing of George Floyd. His mix of empathy, compassion, and stern governance got results. But the peace that has reigned in Newark is not a result of lax policing. Oh, no. It says, when potential rioters threatened municipal facilities and commercial streets, they were met with and deterred by riot police. Yeah, and yet look at the movement to defund the police. These are people that have had success. Leaders that have had some success because they've deployed the riot police. One final example. It says, Mayor Michael Hancock of Denver, he defined in clear terms the distinction between peaceful, productive protest and intolerable violence amid the very first signs of impending civil disorder. Those terms were repeatedly violated, and clashes between rioters and law enforcement in this notoriously progressive city, so here's a left-wing city for sure, notoriously progressive. It says, the local press has focused primarily on the police use of tear gas and rubber bullets to disperse violent crowds, citing activists who accused law enforcement of deploying non-lethal ordnance indiscreetly. There's a statement in this section, too, where it was either the mayor or the police chief that said, this is not a protest. This is a riot. That's what we're not getting in so many of these cities. De Blasio won't say it. Dinkin won't say it. Fry won't say it. Wheeler won't say it. Those that do and those that confront it. Imagine that. They actually have some success in maintaining at least some semblance of peace and order in their cities. My father sent out a coworker letter. These are a few good examples. They stand out in a sea of just gross incompetence and ignorance and childishness. He had this coworker letter from August 28th about how desperately the world needs new leaders. These cities, these states, our nations, they need righteous leaders. And my father mentioned the proverb I mentioned earlier, Proverbs 21 and verse, or 28, sorry, in verse 1. It says, the wicked flee when no man pursues, but the righteous are as bold as a lion. And he makes the point in the coworker letter, it doesn't just say that leaders are bold. It says the righteous. It uses that descriptive term. That it's a righteous leader that has the necessary boldness, that has the necessary courage to stand up to danger, to confront problems, difficulties, obstacles, or threats. Look at what's happened over and over again. There's a lesson in this for us. When you appease a satanic mob, they will overrun your city. They will mock and ridicule you, just like they did Jacob Fry, just like they've done with Ted Wheeler. These are guys that were out in the mob themselves, apologizing to the mob. Then remember what happened to Jacob Fry when he didn't come all the way out on the defund the police like BLM wanted him to, and they shouted him down. He left that crowd like a hurt puppy. He thought he was appeasing the mob. He thought he was giving the mob everything that they wanted. It turns out the mob's never satisfied. So God's raising up new leaders. Can you see how desperate the need is for them? I mentioned that verse yesterday, 1 Corinthians 9:25, where God says that we, in his family, in his church, in his work, that we're pursuing after an incorruptible crown, an everlasting crown. That's what Christians are to receive in God's kingdom. God, this tells you something too about the kingdom and what the responsibilities will be for those born into God's family. God's family that'll be there at the establishment of his kingdom on earth, to administer the government of God over all the earth, every nation, every city. That's what we're preparing for now. God is teaching us. This is what my father laid out in that coworker letter. He's teaching us. He's educating us. He's preparing us to rule. That's got to be real. That's got to be a goal that we look at and aim for every day when we awaken. Revelation 2:26, it says, "And he that overcomes," remember, Christ overcame. So now it's talking about true Christians, the saints of the Most High. "He that overcomes and keeps my works unto the end, to him will I give power over the nations, and he shall rule them," look at this, "rule them with a rod of iron. As the vessels of a potter shall they be broken to shivers, even as I received of my Father." God's looking for leaders who will rule righteously. We qualify for these positions of power by first learning how to be ruled, by first learning to look to our King, our Savior, our head, Jesus Christ, our husband. We submit to his rule, and then he gives us rule. He gives us responsibility. He gives us authority. He gives us even a rod of iron. Lesson 4 of the correspondence course talks about how that the rod of iron is going to need, it's going to be needed, especially at the beginning of the millennium, to bring all nations to the point of submission, to force them actually to be happy. But it's a beautiful thing, because as they begin to live it, as they begin to experience the blessings of righteous rule, the rod of iron is not going to be needed nearly as much. Eventually, it won't be needed at all, because everyone will be sold on God's way of life. Everyone will want this way. They see the benefits of competent leadership, of educated leadership, of courageous leadership, of righteous leadership. Revelation 3:21, it says, "To him that overcomes will I grant to sit with me in my throne, even as I also overcame and am set down with my Father in his throne." If we overcome and conquer the way that Jesus Christ did, then we're going to rule with Christ in the same way that Christ rules with the Father. And what did the Father say in Matthew 28 and verse 18? That's not the only place. It's repeated all through the New Testament. God giving Jesus Christ all power. Just handing it over to him. It says at the end of 1 Corinthians 15 as well. Colossians 1. Ephesians 1. God's preparing for us. He's preparing us, I should say, to rule with his Son. Revelation 5 and verse 10, it says, "And has made us unto our God kings," plural, "and priests," plural, "and we shall reign on the earth." God is about to establish a new world, God's world, the wonderful world tomorrow. There's a commentary, Barnes, that says this about Exodus 19:6. This is the passage where ancient Israel, they entered into this covenant with God, and God wanted to make them a model nation. And they agreed to it. "We'll set an example. We'll be a leader." And Barnes says about Exodus 19:6, "Israel collectively is a royal and priestly race, a dynasty of priests, each true member, uniting in himself the attributes of a king and priest." I mean, this is a calling that they failed at in ancient Israel. God's called us into the church to be a smashing success in this regard, to be the example, to be the leader, to be the king, to be the priest that this world desperately needs. You can look at the parable of the pounds in Luke 19. We went through that recently. And it shows there that to the extent that we grow, to the extent that we multiply those talents and abilities that God gives to us, then he's going to reward us with responsibility in his kingdom. Rulers over cities, 2 cities, 5 cities, 10 cities, entire nations, if we learn to be ruled today. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to submit some feedback, you can email us, td@kpcg.fm. We thank you for joining us on today's show, and we'll see you Monday.